You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hey there, I'm Aaron, and welcome to this week's episode of Reading Writers, the first one after a couple week hiatus. It's really great to be back on the show, and today we're going to talk about old books. Why are we going to do that? Well, because I really love old books. I mean, they allow me to engage with the wisdom of generations past, to see how authors and thinkers of from centuries past answered many of the same questions that we ask today. But, you know, I got to be honest, it's really easy to get caught up reading too many new books. I mean, y'all know that new books are not bad, of course. I mean, most of the guests that we have on this show are writing new books. So I encourage that, and I hope you do check out new books. But one of the things that we can do that is dangerous for us is to neglect the old. We do ourselves a disservice when we only read new books. In the same way that, honestly, sometimes we do ourselves a disservice when we only read old ones too, although it's a little bit harder. And this really, I believe, is the heart behind C.S. Lewis's famous rule that was in God in the Dock. It's a good rule, after reading a new book, never to allow yourself to read a new one until you've read an old one in between. This is what he wrote. He says, if that's too much for you, you should at least read one old for every three new ones. Now, obviously, I don't follow this rule slavishly, of course, but I do try to read as many old books as I can, although there are a number of classics, I'll admit, I've never read. So, for example, I've never read Pride and Prejudice, and I also haven't read Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, for that matter. I've also never read Jane Eyre, and I actually still haven't read 1984. But I have read books like The Catcher in the Rye, The Great Gatsby, To Kill a Mockingbird, A Tale of Two Cities, and a whole bunch of other ones. So it's not like I'm entirely uncouth, just mostly. Now, some classic books, despite their reputation, are terrible. They're just the worst. Take Moby Dick, for example. It is one of the few books that I think I can say that I genuinely hate. And I know that Melville's supposed to be the greatest novelist that America has ever produced, but I really didn't find this book to be all that engaging a read. I mean, I tried to read it in high school as part of an independent study project, and nearly every time I picked it up, I fell asleep. And so I did that thing that I swore I would never, ever do, was I did my report based on the movie. And I got actually a pretty good grade on it, too, so, well, maybe that was okay. A few years later, though, I tried to give it another shot. I wanted to give it a fair shake, and I didn't want to assume that I didn't like it simply because I had a bad experience with it in high school. But the reading experience as an adult was not unlike pushing a boulder up a steep hill in a snowstorm without pants. So take from that what you will. Now, other books have been like that for me as well, especially some of the ones in the Christian space. One that I can think of is by Thomas A. Kempis, The Imitation of Christ, and this one honestly made me want to die inside, so much so that I quit reading it. Not because it was particularly convicting, but because it was just so dull. And I never got the big deal about Romeo and Juliet when we studied in school, though I don't know if that means that maybe I should try it again. So we'll see. And then there's Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was just kind of there. I read it as a teen around the same time that the Francis Ford Coppola movie came out. And I think I was really reading it just to impress fashionably sad girls, which, just so you know, that doesn't work. So if you're a single guy listening to this podcast, that is not going to be a help to you whatsoever. But some classics are totally worth reading. And as longtime listeners know, I adore Charles Dickens' work, especially at Great Expectations. A Tale of Two Cities is fantastic as well. Basically, everything I've read of his, I've really, really enjoyed. He has a, a unique ability to create really interesting and complex characters, and everyone has these mixed motives. They're very real characters, and I enjoy that a lot. John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress makes my soul sing every time I read it, and though I readily admit not everyone feels the same way. Some people, you know, they feel like I did trying to read Moby Dick, reading that book. But here are a few other ones that, you know, if you're dipping your toe into reading classic books, or you just haven't had a chance to get to these ones yet, these are ones that I would encourage checking out. Some of these are intended for spiritual formation, to encourage people who are Christians. Some of them are just fantastic works of literature that have stood the test of time. In some cases, more than 1,000 years. So that it's in itself is pretty cool. So the first one is All of Grace by Charles Spurgeon. And I mean, again, honestly, I could choose almost any Spurgeon book for this list, but I have a special fondness for this one in my heart. I first read it in 2009 while I was sitting in a hospital while doctors were working to keep Emily alive. And this book itself is a fairly simple presentation of justification through grace alone. So it's basically a book form gospel tract. It is one of the most hopeful books I've ever read, and is as close to coming to bringing me to tears as any book has ever done in public. Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton is another one. And what I love about Chesterton is he is really, it's his singular wit that I enjoy. He makes it safe to be cheeky and enjoy wordplay. And he shows you that you don't have to give up intellectual integrity. And whimsy and fun and all of these kinds of things in the Christian life. You can embrace these things, and it's a really good thing, especially as a writer. So whether you're a reader or you're actually a prospective writer, this is a book that you need to read. His work is work that you need to read, just because it's so much fun. Next on the list is someone who borrowed heavily from Chesterton, which is C.S. Lewis. And for the purposes of this list, I'm actually recommending The Screwtape Letters. Most people, when they're saying, hey, you know, check out a C.S. Lewis book, they usually go, aside from Narnia, go with Mere Christianity. I really like Screwtape Letters because it's so ambitious. It's, you know, probably some have criticized it for being overly clever, and maybe that's true, but for me, that's actually part of what makes it work. You need a special sort of cleverness to pull off what C.S. Lewis does in this book, both negatively communicating truth while exposing falsehood. That's hard to do, and it's so easy to fail, but he does it brilliantly, even if I don't agree with everything. Now, here's a fun couple, actually. These are Homer's The Iliad and The Odyssey. So these are epic poems, epic tales from written around 800-ish BC. So about 800 years before Christ, these stories were being told. And they're telling the tales of the Trojan War and the journey of Odysseus, the king of Ithaca, as he journeyed home following the fall of Troy. And they're some of the finest works of ancient Greek literature still in existence. The last book that I'm going to add to my list here in detail is The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. Of all the books that I've talked about so far, this is probably the most difficult to read in that it requires so much of you as a reader. It's filled with philosophical discussions of the deepest sort, explored through the tale of patricide in a Russia that's rapidly moving into the industrial era. And so it's dealing with these problems of human will and good and evil and all of these things. And it's so challenging, but it's so worth taking the time to read. And there are so many other books that could be added to this list. I mean, I didn't mention The Picture of Dorian Gray or The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. I haven't touched on The Divine Comedy or Paradise Lost or A Wrinkle in Time or a dozen more books besides these. But these ones that I've mentioned and some of the ones that I've just listed off, these are books that I want to keep reading as I get older. Most of them actually are books that I want to share with my kids too. They're books that I hope everyone enjoys as much as I do. So as we close, I just want to offer one final encouragement to you as you can start your journey or continue your journey of reading classic books and you see the worthwhile endeavor that it really is. Because the truth is I always get a little bit sad when people seem to live solely in the present in terms of their literary intake. Modern books are good, of course, but by avoiding the classics, we may miss out on something amazing, even if it's our amazement at how much it's possible to irrationally hate one book. What reading classic books does is opens us up to the wider world around us. Through them, we can discover the origins of some of those weird words and wonderful phrases that have slipped into the modern lexicon, the ones that everyone seems to understand, but no one knows where they came from. And so we discover just how much we owe to Shakespeare and how much we owe to the King James Bible on top of that. But we also gain a better sense of the trajectory of Western thought, how we've progressed, or depending on your point of view, how we've regressed in our understanding of the world and of humans and all that is. We understand where we've come from and what we've left behind and maybe even what we need to recover. And to me, that makes reading classics so worthwhile. And I hope it does for you as well.
Thanks for listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes. Your feedback helps more people find the show. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Strongarm. And for more content, including reading recommendations, please visit bloggingtheologically.com.